What we do better than anyone else is we help tell that hospital story. And, you know, we are the storytellers for the industry. We are the storytellers on behalf of all of those patients that are served in our hospitals. And that's really what we strive to do every day, is tell the story as well as we can so that people understand what's going on in the hospitals. And frankly, so they understand what hospitals need to be successful to take care of our patients.
This is Associations Thrive, the podcast celebrating successful associations and their leaders. I'm your host, Joanna Pineda, CEO and Chief Troublemaker at Matrix Group International. Listen in as top association executives tell all, revealing the creative and innovative ways they're increasing membership, generating revenue, nurturing engagement, and reimagining their organizations. By the way, if you've launched a new initiative, created new member services, or updated your governance structure and are seeing great results, I want to hear your story, and so do my listeners. I'd love to have you as a guest. Go to podcast.matrixgroup.net and apply to be on Associations Thrive. Now let's dive into this week's show. Today, I'm speaking with Richard Robertson, President and CEO of the Mississippi Hospital Association, or MHA. Richard, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Richard, tell us about the Mississippi Hospital Association.
Well, so we have been around for almost 100 years. I'm actually only the fourth president and CEO that we've had in our history. So for many years, it was a board, and we had a board chairman. And then after a few decades of that, we hired a president and CEO. And over the last 70 or so years since we've had that model, I'm the fourth one. So we have a long track record of having people in place for a long time. And from our very beginning, we were kind of given the mission by our board and our founders to serve those who serve us all. And so that's what we've tried to live into for the last 100 years, is providing services to our members so they can better serve their patients and their communities. And that's really what we do every day, whether it's through advocacy or all the other services that we provide, and education and other things that we try to do to help our members so that they can better take care of the patients in their communities. And that's what we try to live into every day.
Richard, who are your members? Because in any given state, there are so many different types of hospitals. There's public hospitals, there's religious hospitals, there's municipal hospitals, there's private, for-profit, nonprofit. Who are your members?
Well, we've got a very diverse membership. We have state hospitals, we have psychiatric hospitals, we have acute care mental health hospitals, both freestanding and our hospitals that provide rehab services. So we've got public hospitals that are community owned. We've got nonprofit hospitals, large systems, small hospitals that are publicly owned by their communities, some of which don't even have an emergency department. And then we've got large hospitals that are religiously owned. So we've got a very diverse group. So, you know, we've got the acute care hospitals that are providing those services that most people think of when they think hospital services. And then, like I said, we've got hospitals that specialize in rehabilitation services. We've got some small community-owned hospitals that have developed a niche as a critical access hospital. You know, they're providing services that are very specialized in providing vent-dependent patients the services that they need. So we've got some remarkable things going on in each one of our hospitals with each one of our members, and it's our honor to get to serve them.
I bet that your different membership types have very different needs, but what brings them together to join MHA? What are some common things that they need from you that they decide to affiliate and join?
Well, I think, you know, for almost 100 years now, our hospitals have viewed MHA as a place that they could come to do things together that we oftentimes can't get done by ourselves in silos. And so, for example, 100 years ago, one of the big things that was going on in Mississippi, and I suspect in other states, was whether or not hospitals were going to support establishing minimum standards of care for patients. And there were some who said, no, we don't want the state involved in establishing state regulated minimum standards for the operation of hospitals. And then others that said, yes, we do. And ultimately, the industry through MHA back in, you know, the 1930s came together around common ground principles that were the formation and the foundation of our minimum standards of operations for hospitals, where we all agreed that to be a hospital, you had to be certain things. You had to do certain things. And there were certain standards of care that we were all going to hold ourselves accountable for as an industry. You know, so I think from an association perspective, what I hope makes people want to be a part of our association is that they want to work with each other, that they want to share the common goals of putting patients over profits and focus on the best outcomes for patients as they can through the services that we provide and offer our members, whether it's education services, whether it's partnerships through the various corporations that we vet for our members and basically endorse or give a seal of approval to and say, these are good vendors, these are good partners for you guys to work with in your hospitals. You provide good services at good cost to your patients. And whether that's through insurance relationships, whether that's through technology relationships, or whether it's the advocacy work that we do. And we do a lot of that on the state level, a lot of that on the federal level, working with elected officials and agency heads to help give them the information that they need to do their jobs. And ultimately, I think what we do better than anyone else is we help tell that hospital story. And, you know, we are the storytellers for the industry. We are the storytellers on behalf of all of those patients that are served in our hospitals. And that's really what we strive to do every day, is tell the story as well as we can so that people understand what's going on in the hospitals. And frankly, so they understand what hospitals need to be successful to take care of our patients.
I love that. As someone who considers herself a storyteller, that's just beautiful. Richard, we have a lot to talk about when it comes to MHA, but I want to turn to your journey. How do you get to become president and CEO of the Mississippi Hospital Association?
Well, it's an honor to be able to tell these stories for our members and to hopefully make a difference in the health outcomes for the patients in Mississippi. You know, I grew up in Memphis, Tennessee. All my family is from Mississippi Delta. That's where my parents' roots were from, the Mississippi Delta. I had a chance to, early in my career, come to work in Jackson for the Attorney General's office, and I was assigned to the Division of Medicaid. There for a year, had an opportunity to go to the Mississippi Department of Education, was there for about 5 years in various roles, and then came back to Medicaid in 2004 for about an 8-year run, a little over 8 years. So I kind of cut my teeth as a young lawyer in education and healthcare, and just loved the opportunity to work with healthcare and education policy. Eventually, that took me into private practice of law, and eventually that led to me becoming in-house counsel at MHA. Then after several years in that role, working with our members on advocacy issues and representing them in front of the state legislature and other stakeholders, had a chance to, for about a year and a half, be a part of a really cool thing that I'd love to talk about later, which is a health insurance plan that was started by Mississippi Hospitals. Then after about a year and a half there, had an opportunity to come back where the board honored me with an opportunity to come back and be president and CEO of the Mississippi Hospital Association. I'm grateful to our board for giving me that opportunity to tell their stories.
Richard, how did you find the association? Because what I find often with my guests is it was by accident that they stumbled into the association world.
It's kind of interesting. And during my career at the Division of Medicaid, we did a little headbutting with the association on many issues, primarily centered around the construction of a hospital provider tax, and worked through a lot of late nights and a lot of draft legislation on getting to some mutually acceptable language on that. But then when I got into private practice and was representing a variety of healthcare providers, including hospitals and dentists and nursing homes and physical therapists and really kind of the whole gamut of healthcare providers, I had an opportunity then to do work with the Mississippi Hospital Association, particularly on Medicaid issues. And then that led to an opportunity for me to come in-house with the association back in 2015 and get a chance to work directly with the association and its incredible members. And so I've had that relationship now for a little over 10 years and being really a part of MHA firsthand, and it's been wonderful.
During our prep and in your intro, you talked about the importance of storytelling. So how do you develop your ability as a storyteller, and where do you get the stories from?
Well, Mississippi is famous in many ways for its wonderful authors.
That's true.
You know, you think of William Faulkner, Eudora Welty, modern day, you know, Willie Morris, John Grisham. We've got great storytellers from Mississippi, and I'm not particularly one of them. I'm not putting myself in that category by any stretch of the imagination. But one of the things that we do in Mississippi is we do tell stories about the people and the places. And it's a special place for those of us who live here. And the way we communicate oftentimes is through the stories that we tell. And with our hospitals, there's just amazing stories every day.
Hmm.
It is the essence of what they do incredibly well. They are the ones writing the stories. I love to hear what goes on. I like to go to our members and hear from our members and just see firsthand the incredible things that are going on in our hospitals, whether it's visiting a new labor and delivery suite with the latest technology that helps moms and babies have better health outcomes, or whether it's going to a hospital that's just built a new chapel or at the chapel in their facility. And you see people, you know, at some of their hardest times, but those hospital workers, those employees, those nurses, and everyone in those settings are rendering care in their own ways. And they're just incredible stories of humanity that go on every day.
Well, every association wants to collect stories. So how do you solicit them? And then how do you inventory them and catalog them and make them accessible so that as an association, you have easy access to them? Or what are you doing in this area?
Well, you know, we don't have a library or a data bank full of individual stories. What we do is, you know, we try to listen. I don't work in the hospitals. I'm not providing direct patient care. So it's really through the conversations that we have with our members, with their CEOs. We have different affinity groups that are part of our association where, you know, we had meetings of the chief nursing officers, which was an incredibly valuable, an incredible, amazing team of professionals that we got to interact with extremely closely during the pandemic. Our chief nursing officers were meeting regularly, and we were getting updates directly from our CNOs on the challenges that they were facing during the pandemic. And the stories that came from these meetings, even though we were Zoom, were just amazing. And we have other affinity groups, whether it's our healthcare engineering group, our revenue cycle folks, just the people that work in our hospitals and the opportunities that we get to engage with them in meetings and going to visit with them and touring their facilities and talking with the various people. That's where the stories come from. And you hear these things, then that's great. But going firsthand and seeing the things that happen in hospitals are just amazing. You know, whether it's visiting, had an opportunity several years ago to visit, you know, really just an amazing telemedicine system for taking care of patients in emergency departments through telemedicine. And, you know, just the opportunity to witness that, to see those things that were going on up in the Delta, some amazing things going on with labor and delivery at a small rural hospital in the Delta that are providing cutting edge technology to moms and babies.
Wow.
You know, it's these types of stories and going out and listening and engaging our members and their communities. And even beyond that, going to Rotary clubs, you know, people are pretty open about sharing their story about a hospital experience. That's where the stories come from. And it's just those opportunities to get to retell those.
Well, let's turn to MHA. There is a statistic from the Kaiser Foundation that Mississippi has the lowest cost hospitals in the country. I don't know. What does that mean? Is that good or bad?
Well, you know, it's a good thing for the consumers. Hospitals are not cheap. Hospital services and healthcare in general isn't cheap. In Mississippi, our cost, our expenses, according to Kaiser, are the lowest in the country for inpatient and outpatient expenses. And that's a great thing for our consumers. It means that hospital care in Mississippi is less expensive. There's less cost involved than in other states. That's great. Our challenge in Mississippi has been having the revenue to cover even our very low expenses. And so we're a state that has a high number of our residents that live in poverty, and many of them also suffer from a lot of bad healthcare conditions. And so when you're really, really sick and you don't have the means to pay for it, they create some challenges. And our hospitals, our payer mix for our hospitals across the state tends to be about 65% of it, really almost 70% is a government payer source.
Wow.
So typically it's about 20% Medicaid, about 45% combination of Medicare, Medicare Advantage, and then TRICARE is another 3% usually. So we're 65 to 70% of revenue for our hospitals is derived from combinations of Medicare, Medicare Advantage, TRICARE, and Medicaid. So government payers traditionally aren't the best payers in terms of how much they pay.
The rates, right?
The rates, that's right. And so out of necessity, Mississippi hospitals have had to be pretty lean. It's a good thing in that regard. One of the things, though, that does create challenges is it's harder for our hospitals oftentimes to upgrade their own facilities. And so, you know, we still have many hospitals that were built 60, 70 years ago that had been updated, but the bones of the building are older than they would like to be, and admittedly so in some cases. And so just trying to reinvest in those facilities on very tight margins gets to be a challenge. In spite of that, our quality scores are not at the bottom of the barrel. Our hospitals and the leapfrog scores and other quality measures tend to be middle of the pack. Sometimes we're a little bit higher than that. Sometimes we're a little bit lower, but typically over the years, we average somewhere right around the middle in many of the quality indicators. And that's a testament to doing more with less, actually. You know, that's a good thing.
Yeah. Well, that's amazing. And you're doing some really interesting things in Mississippi. Like you've got your IntelliTrue program. Tell us about that.
IntelliTrue is something that we started several years ago. The health department came to us at the time and wanted our help with a statewide health information exchange that they had, that the health department had inherited after Hurricane Katrina. And it was great for what it was, but there were some limited uses for it. And there were some limitations on providers' ability to connect and use it and integrate it into their operations and really into patient care management. So what we did was we said, look, you know, we're not interested in taking that framework, but what we'll do is we'll do something else. And what we really did, instead of just having a health information exchange that just compiled a, you know, a ginormous amount of data and kept it somewhere in a vault, we took that and used it to integrate into population health and care management tools. And so now what we're able to do with this is we're able to give our hospitals information about their patients to help them improve patient health outcomes, to avoid unnecessary readmissions, to avoid unnecessary returns to the emergency department, to help improve health outcomes, but also lower unnecessary healthcare costs. And we've been able to connect not just hospitals, but physicians, and, you know, we're connecting health plans. So insurance companies are starting to connect so that they can have the ability to better manage their patients that are their plan members.
Wait, so how are you doing this? You're doing this with data? You're doing this with connections?
With clinical data and connections, electronic connections that allow the data to flow. And then if you are a subscriber, you're able to access the data just for your patient. We don't see individual patient data. We're not a healthcare provider in that regard. So we're different, but it's something we put in place with a partner of ours, a company called Care Continuity, who's been amazing to work with. And again, the whole goal is to improve healthcare outcomes, avoid unnecessary duplication of services, avoid unnecessary costs. So if you're a provider and you can see that a patient has just received, you know, an imaging work or labs, somewhere else, then perhaps instead of ordering something a few days later, maybe you can
access it
through their clinical records. That's right. So, and it's agnostic as to what electronic medical record system you're on. It can connect to anything and translate. So it's got some great opportunities. We're already seeing some things just over the last few months that our hospitals are able to do as we're continuing to roll out new products out of it so that they can have the tools that they need to better inform them as they try to make sure their patients are as healthy as they can be, make sure that they, frankly, don't come back to the hospital unnecessarily. We want patients to come when they need to, but when we can avoid an unnecessary readmission, when we can avoid an unnecessary emergency department visit, that's the best thing for the patients. And it goes back to what I said earlier. If we keep the patients first, I think everything else will take care of itself.
Because you've got a whole picture of this patient and all the care they're receiving from the different providers.
That's right. We've had several physicians call us and talk to us about, you know, how beneficial it's been to them. In some instances, they've avoided providing a treatment or a service to a patient or giving them an injection that they were able to see had already been given in an emergency department setting a couple of days before, but the patients may not know anything about the specific drug that they were given. Some patients may know everything about it, others may not. And so where there are those potential gaps in care, we're trying to close those. And we're trying to make sure that the communication infrastructure is in place so that providers are better able to manage their patients.
Wow, that is amazing. I mean, how many times have you been to the hospital? I know I've been to the hospital with my mom and they'll say, why are you here? And, you know, who are you seeing? And I think, oh, God, Jesus, like, shouldn't you know this?
And, you know, to that point, I mean, we're connecting independent physician groups.
Right.
We're connecting accountable care organizations. As I said, payers, hospitals. We've got federally qualified health centers, the FQHCs. We've got community mental health centers that are connecting.
So it's MHA connecting them, and it's your product that's collecting all this data.
Yeah, it's the product that, at the request of the health department several years ago, MHA went out and found a corporate vendor, a partner to build this out. And you know, we helped get it off the ground by building out. The hospitals provide the greatest amount of data. They're so big, so many data points. So that was a natural place to start. And had we had all of this in place the way it is now during COVID, we could have done a lot of really good things to get ahead of some of the waves and project better what was going to happen with our hospital. One of the things that we're building out now is to help show bed availability, you know, what hospitals may have beds available so that another hospital, when they need to, can better and more easily and more quickly transfer a patient. So instead of spending half a day calling 15 hospitals, could we figure out a way to expedite that process? So, you know, we're trying to solve for different problems that our members need, but at the end of the day, the outcomes are intended to help patients and help improve the care that's rendered to them and to reduce unnecessary cost and to help our hospitals provide those services better than they're able to do now with limitations that hopefully some of this additional communication can help alleviate.
Richard, it sounds like there's a lot of innovation happening within the hospital space in Mississippi, and MHA is a big part of it. You've also got something called TrueCare that I would like you to talk to my listeners about, because this is amazing.
Very, very excited about this. So several years ago, a previous governor had said, look, I'm open to suggestions on how you can improve the Medicaid program and particularly improve Medicaid managed care. And I'm open for any ideas. And so Medicaid at the time had had a managed care program for 3 or 4 years. I think it had been live. These conversations took place a little over 10 years ago initially. And so what MHA did was they gathered a group of hospital leaders and they conducted meetings with various stakeholders, including managed care companies. And the conversations were really around, how can we make this better? How can we make this work? And after those conversations concluded, the hospital leader said, you know, we ought to just get in the health insurance space. That's where we're going to get the results that I think we need as providers and affecting the change that we would like to affect for our patients and for our communities. And it kind of went from there.
So a new organization was created that was jointly owned by all the members?
Well, so they created and we had to go to the legislature. The legislature was incredibly good in drafting legislation that allowed us to frame this company as a Mississippi not-for-profit company.
Ah.
So you've got multiple hospitals that put capital into forming a new licensed Mississippi insurance plan. And so it's licensed as a managed care plan in Mississippi under the name of Mississippi True. We are working with a partner on this called CareSource. And so the doing business as name in Mississippi is a mashup of Mississippi True and CareSource called TrueCare. But it is a health plan that is governed by several different Mississippi hospitals. And you have large systems that are a part of it, and you have small rural hospitals that are a part of it, and they've all come together to govern and invest in a health insurance plan to work with the Medicaid population. And so they are currently providing coverage to around 100,000 Mississippi Medicaid managed care enrollees. And I think there's a lot of excitement about what it can do as a provider-sponsored health plan, which is what it is. And so the idea behind that is to reduce the friction and the tension that currently exists in the relationships oftentimes between providers and payers.
Ah.
How can we reduce that tension? How can we be better at the things from a provider standpoint that benefit the patient, but also at the same time being mindful that we do have to make sure that we're not overspending, that we're managing the capitated payment that the state of Mississippi is giving to this company. And we're about 4 months into the experiment, so to speak. And so far, so good, I believe. I think it is something that's really exciting. I don't think any other state has multiple hospitals that have come together to form a provider-sponsored health plan. You certainly have some great hospitals across the country that are doing their own provider-sponsored health plans across different states. But this has multiple organizations coming together and all working together, all coming behind a common goal and a common idea of taking care of Mississippians. Really excited about it.
Wow, that is really exciting. And it sounds like MHA is the place that allowed it to happen, because you have members that might compete with each other under different circumstances, but within MHA, they can cooperate. And like you said, you can get stuff done that normally you can't on your own.
Yeah, I think, you know, what we saw several years ago when this company was able to form and when the membership and the MHA board got behind this was you saw that ability to come together and cooperate behind a common goal. And that was to provide coverage as a provider-led plan to our most vulnerable population, that is the Mississippi Medicaid population. And how can we make a difference for them? How can we improve their outcomes? How can we as providers better understand the insurance world about living within your capitated payment?
Right.
How can we live within that? How can we partner on population health and best practices and get additional insight into what we need to do better as providers? And where are their gaps? Where are there holes in the system that need to be addressed? And what's the best option to do that? Because sometimes there's a schism and sometimes it's a chasm or a gorge or a canyon between providers and payers and not understanding and having different sense of expectations. And what we're trying to model is a way where you can blend those expectations in a way where by combining those interests, you turn out a better product.
That's amazing. And not keep patients in limbo because the insurance company hasn't made a decision on treatment.
Yeah. And not that it's always going to be easy.
Right.
But I think we're learning things. I think we've got opportunities to lower the cost for healthcare overall by doing something like this. We'll see. I think I'm excited to see how this goes over the next few years. Grateful that the state of Mississippi awarded the contract to us. And just really excited about the opportunity that this new entity has. And MHA helped get this off the ground. And it's that type of relationship among the membership where you get people that want to do the right thing for the right reasons coming behind something. And frankly, putting a lot of skin in the game. They put their own skin in the game on this.
Yeah.
So they have a vested interest in making sure that this works well.
Wow. I want to have you back next year because then the experiment will really be in full swing. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd love to.
Richard, MHA is almost 100 years old. What's the next year going to look like? What are the next 5 years going to look like? I'm sure you're thinking about that.
Well, you know, it's crazy in healthcare. I think anyone would love to know what the next 1 year would look like.
That's true.
You know, things change and have been changing so fast. You know, 5 years ago this time, we were still in the middle of the pandemic. My hope is that MHA will continue to be a leader in thought and education and advocacy for the hospital industry in the state and certainly for our membership. We want to be their best advocate. We want to be their best storyteller. We want to be the ones that our legislature, our stakeholders, our policymakers rely on for trusted advice. I don't see that changing. You know, we want to make sure that at all times, again, we're putting the patients first and that what we're doing ultimately is going to help our members serve their communities and their patients better. And that hopefully what we're going to see in a few years are improved health outcomes through things like IntelliTrue, where we're better connecting patients and we're seeing unnecessary emergency department visits go down. We're seeing unnecessary readmissions go down. We're seeing better coordination of care, leading to better health outcomes and hopefully lower cost for consumers. And hopefully that's the goal that we'll see. I think more than anything right now in healthcare, what most healthcare providers, whether they're hospitals or any other aspect of healthcare, what the things that they're most interested in is predictability and stability. They want to know what they need to do for their patients. They want to know what the regulations are going to be. They want to know what the reimbursement is going to be, and they want people to leave it alone. There are some incredibly smart and talented people in healthcare, and they will figure it out. You know, what is a challenge is when the rules of the game, the rules of reimbursement keep changing. And so whether you're working with government payers or whether you're working with private payers, when the rules of the game change, it's hard to make long-term business decisions. Recruiting a physician, hiring nurses, hiring other talented staff to come work at your hospital and make a long-term commitment is a challenge when the environment is not as stable as it needs to be. So that's a long answer on that. But yeah, that's where I hope we will be is ultimately 5 years from now, able to look back and say the things that we're doing today have made a difference for our patients.
I got one more question before we go. As the storyteller for the industry, what's one thing you wish people would know about Mississippi hospitals?
Oh gosh, there's so many things. I think what I would like for people to know about Mississippi hospitals is that the folks that I talk to, our MHA members, they wake up every day trying to make sure that they're providing the best care to their patients that they can provide. Sometimes those challenges are incredibly hard. Sometimes they're working in communities that don't have deep resources. You know, they're not operating in cities of 3 million people. Our whole state is 3 million people, and most of our counties are rural. And so, you know, outside of some of our metro areas, our rural hospitals are doing some amazing things. And tomorrow is National Rural Health Day. And I do think it's important that we recognize the stories, particularly in our rural hospitals. But then fast forward to some of our hospitals in Jackson, our big facilities in Jackson that are taking patients, transferring them in from rural parts of the state with very limited resources oftentimes. They're doing their best to make a difference in those patients' lives and to keep them alive oftentimes and render the care that they need that ultimately allows them to keep telling their own stories.
Richard, this has been terrific. Impressive work you're doing over there at MHA. Let's have you back next year.
Thank you. I'd love to. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to Associations Thrive. We're so glad to have you here. You know, my personal mission and the mission of my company, Matrix Group International, is to help associations and nonprofits increase membership, generate revenue, and thrive in the digital space. I want to hear stories of how your organization is thriving in today's challenging landscape. Please apply to be on my show by going to podcast.matrixgroup.net. By the way, do you need help with a digital initiative? Maybe it's a website redesign, a new membership database, or a hybrid meeting that you're planning. I'd love to connect with you. please visit the Matrix Group website at matrixgroup.net. Thanks again for listening to this week's episode of Associations Thrive. Don't forget to subscribe to the show, leave a 5-star rating, post a comment, and share it with your colleagues and friends.